Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C. This is Agriculture Today.
The other impact we did see was some wind with the core of the former hurricane moving ashore and through Southern California.
Brad Rippey, meteorologist, USDA.
Yuma, Arizona, right in the lower end of the Colorado Valley, seeing a wind gust to 69 miles per hour. And then on the other side of the Colorado River into South Central California, around Imperial, we saw a wind gust officially to 66 miles per hour. And we actually did see some wind gusts to hurricane force in the higher elevations of Southern California, where the core of the former hurricane moved ashore. And a couple of the official numbers coming in, Palomar Mountain Lookout, 79 miles per hour in Southern California, and one of the highest gusts that we saw officially observed at this point, 84 miles per hour, Big Black Mountain in Southern California.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Well, I think that finding that 90% are either definitely or probably going to continue cover crops after the incentive payment ends really explodes the myth that farmers only do cover crops when they're paid to do them. And once the payment goes away, that's the end of it.
University of Missouri's Dr. Rob Myers on results from the recent National Cover Crop Survey.
When 90% are saying they're going to continue and only 3% are saying they're going to stop, that's a pretty strong indication that the incentive is not an issue. Now, on the flip side, we didn't bring it out a whole lot in our remarks today, but we did have information in the survey about what non-users thought, and incentive payments continue to be something they're very interested in. So as a motivational tool to get farmers into cover cropping, I think incentives do play a really important role, and they help cover that transition period of the first 2 or 3 years where most farmers, let's face it, are going to have a slight reduction in their net profit because of the cost of that cover crop seed. After about 3 years, both from our survey and other data, we've seen that you start to break even and even gain some net profit as yields gradually increase and the soil improves, and maybe you have a little bit of reduction in fertilizers or other net costs. So those incentives are an important transition tool, but we don't need to have them forever. I guess that would be as far as an individual field, you know, they can help a farmer transition a field into it. And just keep in mind, no farmer puts, if they're a 1,000-acre farmer, they don't put the whole 1,000 acres into cover crops in 1 year. They may start with a 40-acre field. The next year, they add another 40-acre field. And over that 10 years that they're gradually getting experience, they may get up to half of their acres or two-thirds of their acres or even all their acres. But so we do need these incentives to help with that transition.
Speaking of transition, let's look at pork exports.
Exports of U.S. pork continue to climb in June, up 12% on volume from the previous year. As U.S. Meat Export Federation President and CEO Dan Hallstrom explains, it caps a strong first half of the year for pork exports.
For the first 6 months, we're up 14% on volume, up 12% on value. And that the real star of the show continues to be Mexico, up 14% off of last year, by far a record. So that's encouraging. But I would say what's even more encouraging is that it's not just one country. I mean, we've got the Hong Kong, China region up, mainly driven by variety meats. Japan had a good month in June. Demand is solid on the pork side, and there's some outside factors helping that, like the shortage or relatively short situation of pork in Europe, which is making U.S. pork even that much more attractive in markets like Taiwan.
The strong export sales are building value for U.S. pork producers.
Year to date, the first half value per head of exports on the pork side was just under $64 a head. That's represents 10% growth year on year. And I would say that we're positioned going into the second half of the year to not only maintain, but possibly exceed those numbers globally.
While beef exports are below the record pace of 2022, there are signs of strength, bringing the per head value of fed slaughter back above $400.
We had the highest value since the fall of 2022 for a month, so easily the largest value month for this year, led by Mexico. And if you look at Mexico year to date, we're up 14% on the beef side, and that's a combination of variety meats and muscle cuts. We have some other regions continue to show growth as well. Africa having a tremendous first half of the year, led by variety meats, of course, South Africa in particular. You know, the EU is up, and you have places like Peru that are up, led by variety meats. So I would say that on the beef side, you're starting to see some trend lines come through that are more and more positive every day.
I'm John Harith.
And this is Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
I understand, you know, money doesn't sleep, and we've got to chase the best returns and that sort of thing we can get as a fiduciary and a banker and that sort of thing. But to invest in companies that are building warships or airplanes that are going to be used to kill American servicemen and women, our sons and daughters who are serving in the armed services, there's something very concerning about that.
Robert O'Brien is the former National Security Advisor, speaking recently at the Hudson Institute on China.
To invest in companies that are abusing the Uyghurs, think about it today. It's 2023. It's August 2023. There are slaves picking cotton in China today. And think about that, just that image, that there are slaves picking cotton in China, and we've got American companies that are buying those products made from that slave labor. There are Uyghur men being sent to vocational camps, work camps, and their wives they're being replaced by Han Chinese because of the One China policy, and there are too many Chinese males, and Han Chinese men are being moved into their homes with these Uyghur women. I mean, when you think about what's going on, this isn't a contest of ideas that people talk about. Well, they've got an autocratic system, or they've got this hybrid system, and it's more efficient. This is a choice between liberty and the worst form of totalitarianism. And so to have American companies, big companies on Wall Street, saying, well, we can get a slightly better rate of return. There's no better investment that we can make in America or in Europe or in Vietnam or the Philippines or India. There's no better rate of return that we can get than investing in you know, a company that's either in China that's dual use, that's going to make platforms that are kill American kids in uniform, or that are abusing Uyghurs, or just even abusing the people of China. That's something that I think some of these wealthy guys, and maybe if you've got $1 billion or $10 billion or $50 billion, and you're like some of these masters of the universe on Wall Street, they don't care. But they ought to look in the mirror and think about what they're doing and how much is enough. I mean, it's I say this as a Republican. I'm all for free enterprise and making as much money as you can, taking advantage of the opportunities you've got in this country to become wealthy. But to use your money in that sense, you know, it took a long time for people to get over investments in Nazi Germany in the 30s. A long time. And I think at some point some of these companies that are investing in China are going to face that same moral reckoning. And I think it's going to be sooner rather than later. And they really have to look in the mirror and decide if they're doing the right thing as not just as Americans, but as human beings.
But America does have some strengths.
The strongest thing we've got going in America and our allies, Japan, especially on the ships area, but across the board, is our ability to research and development, our innovation, our creativity. So when you look at the innovators that we've got here and our allies, and I was just recently in Japan, I was recently in Taiwan, freedom breeds this entrepreneurial spirit and this innovative spirit. And so I think in the free world in the West, our strongest area is innovation, entrepreneurship, new ideas that are eventually knocked off and stolen by the Chinese. But I think we can maintain our advantage through our innovation. But it's been an incredible strength of the Chinese because they really control manufacturing and pharma and rare earths and in so many important areas right now. And they've done a good job of moving it from us. You know, Puerto Rico used to be a big pharmaceutical manufacturing area. Now it's gone. Those factories are sitting empty because that manufacturing is in China. And so that's their strength. Our strength, I think, is on the innovation front.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Your proactive manager, they're going to have a plan.
Dr. Dave Cole is professor emeritus at Virginia Tech. Talks about what ag lenders will need to do this year.
And matter of fact, they'll have a game plan managing all three of these. You know what the best friend of your agriculture producer is going to be? A spreadsheet. And a spreadsheet with various scenarios. What was I doing after I worked out this morning? It was real interesting. I was up in the room doing spreadsheets on the creamery. As a matter of fact, our CFO and CEO are doing them separate of me. And what was I doing? Shock test. Interest on operating money, 2-4% we put in. Oh, yeah. How does that influence the bottom line? And folks, you know what you're going to say? Well, if we do that with our customer, they're just going to go to the competition. No. And by the way, I'm going to tell you, where is a lot of your customers getting their money from non-traditional lenders. And this is something that you're going to have to be very, very concerned about. And you know one of the things? You don't know what you don't know because we're taking annual financial statements. And one of the things are going to look pretty good this year, but boy, you better be careful and watch the non-traditional lender. Will they be there?
Says it's important to remember what you do have control over and how to manage it.
Isolate your boxes. You're going to have the uncontrollables, and then you're going to have the controllables. The problem is, lenders and producers will focus more on this because this is what gets headlines. You cannot manage the uncontrollables. You manage around them. This is where your alternative management plans are. Focus on the things that you can control. Okay?
And when it comes to focus, he says sports is a perfect analogy.
You know, I talk about sports, and I'm going back out on the road this year. Matter of fact, I'm lining up. I usually spend about 3 weekends this winter with Division III and Division I basketball teams. And one of the things that I'll do, I'll go to their practices, go to their film sessions. Actually, the schools have me lecture, you know, on economics and business. And one of the things is, I was down in Davidson, pre-pandemic, home of Steph Curry. And by the way, they were very gracious to me. Spent 3 days there. And I was on a Saturday morning practice. And Mike Hinton, you could tell this story. You played against Larry Bird, both in high school and college. And I was watching the assistant coaches work with the point guards. And you know what they said? You know, tonight there's going to be a lot of people yelling and screaming at you. What do? You look over the rim, you follow your fundamentals, and you're going to make 80% of your shots. And you know when they said that? Sometimes you have to have things reinforced from the back of the mind up in the front of the mind. And working with your customers, it's going to be about focus on basics and fundamentals. And, oh, you're going to hit 100%? No, but you're going to hit 70-80%. Look at your FinBin data over the years. Your top 20% typically do it about 70% of the time. Make a buck. And that's what we got to get them. But guess what? We'll get distracted with all the uncontrollables.
The biggest issue, though, is second-guessing or lamenting marketing plans.
Watch the trade disruptions with geopolitics. Hey, Putin decides, we aren't going to allow the ships to go through, so all of a sudden you get that little bump in wheat prices. And when I was in the state of Washington the other day, you know what one of the producers said? Well, I marketed my wheat too quick. You know what I told him? Get over it. You're going to leave money on the table. You see, these things will get you very emotionally set up.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Frankly, there have been a lot of other things going on in Washington, D.C.
South Dakota Representative Dusty Johnson is a member of the House Ag Committee.
We are, I think, getting to a point now where we're beginning to build up some momentum behind a farm bill. We had a hearing today. I'm chairman of the subcommittee that oversees rural development, among other things. We had a great hearing today with some real specific examples about what we need to do in that rural development title to better invest in rural communities. And so we're getting the kind of specific feedback from broader America that I think is going to help us bring this farm bill into focus. But we don't have a lot of time. We do need, I think, to shift into a higher gear and be prepared to get this thing done in the next few months.
As ongoing drought grips much of the West and Midwest, farmers and ranchers are utilizing farm bill programs to ensure they're acting as stewards of the land. Megan Richner, a farmer in Missouri, which has been one of the driest spots in the country, says the farm bill's conservation programs have positively impacted her operation and kept them in business.
Really, those conservation programs in the farm bill saved our farm during this drought that we're experiencing. If it wasn't for those, we'd be in a pretty bad shape on our farm. We have not had to sell any cows. We've had some land, we've had grass, and really our land and grass would be in much worse condition if we would not have started using these conservation programs back in 2014.
Richner says Congress can't wait until next year to pass a farm bill.
Due to the uncertainty in agriculture, whether it's an uncertainty in markets, whether it's the uncertainty in weather across the United States, certainly for us, the Farm Bill has been a safety net. It allows farmers like us to weather the storm and help us continue to grow food for our communities, whether it's crops or, in our case, producing beef. Still able to do that because of the Farm Bill and the programs that it provides.
She encourages farmers and ranchers to reach out to their elected officials and share their agriculture story.
One of the best things a farmer and rancher can do to really get the Farm Bill across the finish line this year is just pick up the phone and have a conversation with your legislators or their staff. How has the Farm Bill impacted your farm? They say a picture is worth a thousand words. Show them those pictures. Tell them your story.
Chad Smith, Washington.
Farmers and ranchers depend on Farm Bill programs for many reasons, including improving their land. Idaho Farm Bureau member Jason Fellows says programs like EQIP, the Environmental Quality Incentives Program, are essential for improving sustainability.
I was able to actually do an EQIP project 4 years ago, but the really neat thing was my grandpa did an EQIP project on the same tract of land in 1957, and so it's never ending that we can be more sustainable and focus on those things that truly help protect us as farmers and ranchers, but also help protect the land. But an EQIP program is an incentive-based program that if you look at how to be a more sustainable farmer, there's some incentives to help you implement those practices on your farm.
Fellows says Congress needs to pass a farm bill this year, not just to promote environmental sustainability, but also to promote economic sustainability.
Because the prosperity and the future of our nation depends on a secure and sustainable food system. I don't think we recognize exactly what the farm bill does for everyday Americans. And being able to feed everybody in the nation is what we need to be focused on. It helps everybody in our nation have food to eat and fiber to live off of.
Fellows encourages all farmers and ranchers to tell their lawmakers the importance of the Farm Bill to their operation.
We need to focus on connecting the dots. Some of our elected officials don't recognize the Farm Bill affects everyday people, and we need to connect the dots not only for our congressmen, but also for average Americans to help them recognize what the Farm Bill does for each and every one of us every day. But definitely telling them our story and what the Farm Bill can do to protect our sustainable food system, and it gives us that safety net so we continue to have prosperity in our nation.
Michael Clements, Washington.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
We try to do this branding, and you know, people have said it's childish and America doesn't do this.
Speaking recently at the Hudson Institute, Robert O'Brien, former National Security Advisor, the topic, China.
But we send so much foreign aid overseas, sacks of grain and rice and equipment and that sort of thing. And it'll say, it'll have, you know, all kinds of different labels on it. We came up with a label with an American flag. It's a gift from the people of the United States with a flag label on it, showing that it was coming from America. Just to let people know, you know, at the more subsistence level foreign aid, this is a gift from the American people to your country. And we're not giving 10% of it to your leader in a Swiss bank account. We're not going to come collect on the debt that we're giving you. This is aid that's coming from the American people because we want to see you do well and succeed and not go hungry. And unfortunately, that program, I don't believe, has gone forward. But we need to do a better job with our private sector investment of letting people know that these private sector companies are a result of the free enterprise system that we have in America. And we need to get our companies more involved in letting people know that, you know, this is American or Western investment. But number two, on the direct investment, what do we do? And the foreign aid that we give as a country, we need to brand it and market it and let people know and not be shy about it. But, you know, look, there's something about the Judeo-Christian ethic that we have that you don't want to tell people, Miles. You know, I don't want to come say, hey, I'm giving you this and it's from me and you owe me something for it. I mean, it's not our, we do things, we want, you know, the right hand not to know what the left hand is doing when we're giving charity. And yet that's not how things work in the world. And we need to be a little bit more upfront about letting countries know that the American people are supporting them and that we're helping them out. Not in a way to make them dependent, but in a way to make them prosperous and help them stand up. And the Chinese do a very good job of that. They let you know every little thing they do for you, even if they're going to eventually, you know, take the collateral back and own half your country. But I think we need to do a better job explaining what American business does and what the American government does overseas, so that the folks know that we are engaged and that we're not isolationists and we care about, you know, what's happening with our friends and allies, and we care what's happening in deepest Africa and the farthest reaches of Asia, that America cares.
So one of the big questions, what do you do about it? The U.S. does have a strength.
I think that what the Chinese have done, and it was, you know, I give them credit for it. I mean, they're smart people. They had a plan. They hollowed out our industrial manufacturing capability. They basically took all our manufacturing and everything from, you know, it started out with toys and lower-end things, but now it's at the semiconductor level, at the robotics level. They moved our manufacturing to China. and to countries around China that they control, or they have controlling interests in the companies in some of the countries around China. And they moved that whole manufacturing sector to China and parts of Asia, which they control. And it's going to be very difficult to replicate that. It's going to be very difficult to bring it home. I mean, we're seeing this with, that's how we had the CHIPS Act. And we're going to have to invest a lot of money to bring manufacturing back to America and back to our partners. And look, our partners are all over the world. I mean, Mexico is a great partner. Costa Rica, Colombia, I mean, Brazil in our hemisphere. But there are partners like Vietnam, Singapore, Australia. So we've got great partners. The Philippines, I think, and Thailand can be great partners in the manufacturing sector. India. But it's going to take a lot of effort diplomatically and economically, and we're going to have to get our private sector involved. And they're going to have to understand that they risk leaving their manufacturing in China, because if there is a conflict, you know, they don't own those factories. The CCP owns their factories, and they're going to lose them. So we got to start thinking about how we, you know, I think the word the Biden administration uses now is de-risk, but I think it's more than that, how we protect our supply chains by moving them out of China.
This is Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Here's my risky customer. Below average production, marketing, and financial management. Don't know their cost of production. They don't know their break-evens.
Dr. Dave Kolb, Professor Emeritus, Virginia Tech, on the riskiest customers for ag lenders.
And can I just share with you, if you go on Shark Tank with Mark Cuban, that bald-headed dude, you know, Mr. Beautiful or whatever his name is, What's the first question they're going to ask you? What is your break even, your cost? If it's good enough for a Shark Tank, you ought to put that big quote and say Dave Cole said that. If it's good enough for Shark Tank, it's good enough for agriculture. Right? The other thing is, the lender develops the cash flow on the balance sheet. This is 2022. This is not last century. And we do these one-year drive-by financials. And by the way, can I just share with you why we've got liquidity on the balance sheet? They couldn't buy the machinery because they couldn't get it. Now they're going to be able to get it. Hello, as Dick Vitale would say. And you know what the other thing is? The collateral lender and the unearned net worth, it's the paper wealth. And the whole thing is, what about all the families that are living out of the business? Grandma and grandpa, mom and dad, junior and juniorette, and then the kid that comes home and lives in the basement with a significant other, and they bring everybody back in. That never happens. Folks, one of the things that I can tell you is your operating lines of credit are tied right to family living expense. And remember, they're going to live out of your operating lines of credit. And that is why you've got to watch this. And so that family living expense is going up, but it's how many families are living out of the business.
And he says, watch out for financial trap doors.
Failure to conduct financial sensitivity analysis and margin management. Taking ownership of numbers annually and monthly and quarterly. Every good business needs a Marge. Who's Marge? Let's go back to upstate New York, where I grew up, 60 miles north of Syracuse. Dairy farm, little crew cut dude. And I used to go to the John Deere dealership with my dad. And by the way, every dairy farmer in that area, who did they fear? Marge. Oh yeah, Marge Schwett. She kept track of the accounts receivable, the parts and the supply. But guess what? Marge kept that dealership in business. In the 1980s, we had a lot of what I'd call Marges. Now, we've got Marge and Marvin. But one of the things that'll happen is a lot of your bigger companies, bigger businesses, have turned the financials over to a CFO. And the owners and managers don't know what's going on. They don't have the ownership of numbers. You know what the other thing is? Oh, they're big. We've got to require audited financial statements. Now, audited financial statements are okay, but are they using the statements in business decision making? That's the biggest crutch I've ever heard. Here's the other thing. Sorry about this. I was down in Georgia the other day doing a deal. You know what the one of the producers says? Well, the government's going to take care of us. You know, farming the alphabet. And you know what another producer from Minnesota said? The government's always taking care of us. That type of mindset and attitude is not sustainable. You follow where I'm coming? Remember my theme. Can you get in the black without government? That is going to be, regardless of size of business.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
This past week across the Midwest, it was fairly cool, but with not much rain. So USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey says Monday's condition rating for corn and soybeans is what he calls
the calm before the warm.
Before the heat returned this past weekend. And so for the week that ended this past Sunday for corn,
we did see a small net decline in condition, likely due to some of that ongoing dryness, especially in the western Corn Belt. We're seeing 58% of the corn crop rated good to excellent on the 20th of August, 15% very poor to poor.
Overall, a small decline in corn condition nationally of 3%. For soybeans,
there was a very, very slight overall decline in the condition, but no change in good to excellent. That was steady at 59%. We did see a one-point increase in the very poor-to-poor ratings.
Going up from 12% to 13%, so not much to report except that the heat is back. Brad says we may see some bigger changes in condition ratings this time next week. Gary Crawford, Washington.